Good morning. This
is not a joint meeting of the House and Senate Education Committee. This is the House Education Committee. Will come to order. Today is Friday, March 10th, and the time is 8:03 a.m. Members of House Education present are Vice Chair Representative Parrish, Representative Jennifer Johnson, Representative Chuck Kopp, Representative Dave Tallarico, and myself, Harriet Drummond. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, you know the drill about cell phones. Today, our recording secretary is Kelly Burnett, and Alex B.B. Guidice is our LIO moderator, assisting with teleconferencing and tech support. Thank you both. We have a really full schedule today, and we'll be hearing House Bill 64, Reading Proficiency Task Force, Dyslexia, House Bill 135, School Construction Grant Program, and House Bill 137, State Council on the Arts. Before we get to those bills, however, we have a confirmation hearing first. Mary Hughes is the governor's appointee to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. Ms. Hughes, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning, Ms. Hughes. Thank you for being present with us telephonically. Members did get your resume last week, so please place your name on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mary Catherine Hughes, and I reside in Anchorage, Alaska. And as my resume indicates, I'm an Alaskan born on Kodiak Island. I was fortunate enough to be born on Kodiak Island, and I grew up in Anchorage. And as my educational background is listed on my resume, I've spent 20 years of my life practicing law in a law firm, a private firm here in Anchorage. And I was fortunate enough to represent clients mainly in the telecommunications field, but I also did other types of law. I was municipal attorney under Mayor Rick Maestrom in the 90s into 2000, and I worked for 9 years for U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski as her chief administrative officer of her campaign, but also as her state director in Alaska for 3 years. I retired. I've retired a couple of times, but I permanently retired in 2008, and I've served on the University of Alaska Board of Regents since 2002, when then-Governor Tony Knowles appointed me. And then I was reappointed in 2008 by Governor Palin. I also serve on the Willamette University Board of Trustees. I'm a life trustee at Willamette, and I've served for the last 4 years on the Association of American Governing Boards of Universities and Colleges Board of Directors. That organization is it's like a trade association for regents and trustees. My family has been involved in education for a very long time. Both my grandmothers were teachers. My father received his teaching certificate before he went to law school. He was on the Kodiak School Board as well as the Anchorage School Board. He co-founded the University of Alaska Foundation in the 70s. Education, and my sister was also a teacher, education has been just part of our life, and I was very honored to be appointed by Governor Knowles to the Board of Regents in 2002, and certainly honored to continue on the Board of Regents. Lots has happened on the Board of Regents since 2002, and the university, of course, is very dear to me. Not only was my father very involved with the university, but both my sister and I, of course, completed our bachelor's degrees in the university and at Fairbanks. It was called the University of Alaska at that point, but we were on the Fairbanks campus. I was particularly pleased at the appointment by the governor, Governor Walker, as the university right now faces troubling times. As you know from our circumstance with general funds, we're facing loss of funds. And we also have a circumstance in which Alaska is going through a population decline, particularly a decline in the schools, and therefore our major transportation vehicle, the school districts and the high schools in Alaska, are not providing the number of students as they have in the past. So we're really attempting to work, as we have for the past few years, on providing some college knowledge for those students throughout Alaska. I think I could safely say that my goal coming on the Board of Regents has not yet been met. I really believe that the University of Alaska has the capability and the excellence of teaching to be the university for all Alaskans, and that's what I would hope. I'll be working on that should I be confirmed, and it's a big job, and the university needs that type of help, because from an administrative standpoint, we have a wonderful, wonderful president, President Johnson, and of course, as you know, you're familiar with the strategic pathways, and I think we have a way forward, and I think each and every member of the Board of Regents needs to be as, you know, as committed as they can be, which at the present time they are. So I'm very pleased to serve on the board. I'm on, obviously, there's been many regents served during the time I was first appointed. That's the end of my comments, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hughes. Do any members have questions for Ms. Hughes? Representative Johnson, go ahead.
Thank you to the Chair. Morning, Mary.
Good morning.
As your position as a trustee of Willamette, does that include governance?
It does. Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, it does include governance. It's the trustee, it's the, just as the regents are select the president here, the trustees at Willamette are in charge of, their duty is a selection of the president.
Which I think could give you a very interesting perspective, because one is a private college and one is a public university. Do you see, have you gleaned institutional knowledge as you work through both? And I was happy to hear you refer to the declining student enrollment. Not that I'm pleased about that, but I think that's a national trend. And do you glean, as I say, institutional knowledge is how best to approach that?
Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, you point out a really interesting dichotomy. One of the reasons the Association of Governing Boards wanted me to be on their board was I served both, and I have served for years, on both Willamette's board and that of the University of Alaska. And Willamette has, as a private institution, of course, is very much affected, in particularly in 08, during the decline in the United States with respect to the depression, which in effect Alaska missed in a way, and for different reasons we're going through it now. I think that private schools, in particularly because of the high tuition, are very interested in figuring out where their students come from. And for instance, as an example, I was just at a four-day retreat at Willamette, and Willamette now, when I went to Willamette Law School, Willamette drew from the, in essence, the Pacific Northwest, including Alaska and Hawaii, and a lot from Oregon. That's where Willamette got most of its students, particularly undergraduate. In the years that have transpired, now many of the students come from California, and the California wish to have all students remain in state and make it very, very feasible financially and otherwise for them to stay in state really affects a Willamette's ability to attract those students. So it's a different paradigm, but it's all about the same thing. So we have to get every student that we get counts, and the same way with the University of Alaska. And as you know, not all of our students are come out of K-12. Many students come back to the university and also come back as part-time students, not full-time students. So we are continuously educating all Alaskans at some point. In Southeast, you have the mining certificate, and you know, we have fisheries programs for in a less than bachelor's degree position. So one of the things that my father always said is, you know, don't let a day go by but you're educated. And I try to do that. So, yes, I have learned lots about education in the last 25 years, and I continue to learn. And I think each institution has to develop their own plan with respect to making sure that from a student standpoint, from a matriculation standpoint, they have the students they need so that the institution can be healthy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnston. Any other questions from the members? Representative Parrish, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Over the last few decades, the cost of tuition in real terms has increased at more than twice the rate of inflation. What do you attribute that to, and what can you do to control the problem of student debt, which I believe in this country now exceeds $1 trillion?
Through the Chair, Representative Parrish, I agree and concur with respect to the rising student debt, and it continues to rise. At the University of Alaska, our increases are typically, and there may be different reasons for different particular times, but typically they're driven by financial circumstances. That, you know, we get general funds, we get tuition, and then we get research. And the research, for the most part, those dollars are restricted, obviously, to the research they're doing. But, of course, they have for every, you know, dollar of research, we certainly see that doubling and tripling and quadrupling effect within the community. But when we're looking at how we make our budget, get to our budget that's 100%, we look at tuition because that's a driver of the budget. So I guess from our perspective, I'd say I speak for many of the trustees or the regents that we feel that our tuition is still quite good. But of course, you know, in the dark ages when I went to school, tuition was, you know, I think we were paying $100 for as many credits as you can take. So obviously tuition has risen. We think very, very carefully when we raise tuition, but the driver, in good times, if we were receiving general funds at a level that we feel we could not have to raise tuition, that would be great. But in every circumstance, every year, I could say, I guess, from my perspective, my desire is not to raise tuition. And sometimes we have to raise it. And I understand about student debt, but I also think that the University of Alaska provides a good quality of education for the money paid.
Thank you, Representative Parrish. Representative Kopp, go ahead.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes. Just a question about university leadership. How do you see your role as a regent navigating the divide between the faculty staff who recently took a vote of no confidence in the president, and that you were serving as a regent during that time? So can you comment on what you think the problem is and how you will work to resolve that going forward?
Through the Chair, Representative Cobb. Change is very difficult. It's difficult for every one of us. And I think that When a situation arises that, as it has with strategic pathways, and change is in the air, I think that people are fearful. And at our last meeting, the first part of March, we had a two-hour group think, almost, in public with the governance representatives. And that was very, very helpful. And I think that the regions under the chairmanship of Gloria and Neil are going to do more of that. We value the faculty and we respect the faculty a great deal, and so does the president. It's a circumstance that as a matter of fact, I, on my time, I'm going on 16 years on the Board of Regents, we have not ever been in a circumstance that we are, in effect, going to be cutting lines of education. That means, I mean, not educating educators, but the lines of what are we going to teach at what campuses and what is going to be closed down. Are some learning centers going to be closed down? How we're going to handle the various campuses, how can they best be handled? So those things are big, big items, and when we think about conquering that to make us the best we can be in the future, you know, we're all kind of in this together. And as a matter of fact, at that meeting, I feel like the faculty is going to be coming up, as well as the students and the administrative staff, with ideas. I mean, it doesn't all have to come from strategic pathways and the regents and the president and his executive group. And so, you know, we're working on it. And I think that the faculty spoke out in the way that they, I mean, we've had those votes in the past, and it's because of something. And right now, it's because they are feeling threatened by what has to go on and what has to happen. How are we going to get another million? And so, that's very human. It's very human to feel threatened. And I think at every one of our meetings, we're now going to be meeting with the faculty and student and administrative representatives. And I think that might help. And we hope it does.
Okay. Any further questions from the members? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think it's a surprise for anyone around the table that the University of Alaska has got a pretty large statewide staff, which Abelbolt Ito, a professor from UAF, proposed reducing in order to increase the level of scholarships available to students, increase the research staff, and hopefully draw in more attendance. And I know that he's requested of the Board of Regents to hear his plan. Has he yet been given a chance to present that?
To the chair, and I'm sorry, I didn't hear who asked the question.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Representative Parrish.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess it was. I'm not even on a cell phone, Representative Parrish, and it got garbled. Through the chair, Representative Parrish. Of course, Professor Ito attends every one of our meetings, so we have a great time to talk with him. With respect to statewide, generally, many of the functions statewide does are functions that would have to be done elsewhere. I mean, is the president and his staff, but then you have payroll functions, accounting functions, and those things. So when you look at statewide, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but there are positions that would have to be just continued. We have some foundation positions in statewide. So when we're looking at it, in effect, you're looking at a group, and it may be in numbers, dollars, it may be relatively large because you're having people that earn money, a larger amount of money. But from the standpoint of positions, we'd have to put those positions somewhere else. So I think the board has been given, I've read Professor Ito's document that he produced. As a matter of fact, I think he sent it to all of us. But we have our own time through the meetings, obviously, since he attends all of them, to talk to him. So we're looking at statewide, and as a matter of fact, at the last meeting we were talking about, you know, whether it would be better to bring some of those state, does it make a difference to bring some of those statewide functions down into the different universities? In other words, transfer some to Fairbanks, maybe some to Anchorage, depending. So it is different than someone might expect. It is not solely the president and his executive staff. It's functions that all the universities use all the time.
Anyone else?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Parrish. Ms. Hughes, this is Representative Drummond. I have a couple of questions myself. I'm glad to hear you talking about the statewide issue. I have been hearing lots and lots about the statewide issue from faculty as well as students. I'm concerned that statewide does not do a lot of teaching, and that I heard you reference a lot of high salaries in that area. It's been suggested to me that what the university, the State University in Oregon did in dismantling its statewide department, I'm not sure what you call it, did appear to operate well there. Are you considering anything like that?
Thank you, Representative Drummond. I'm familiar, of course, because I'm at Willamette several times a year. I'm familiar with what Oregon did. Many states, Maine is looking at Maine's looking at combining all the institutions. Many, many states are doing different things, and we're looking at each and every one of them, and our staff has looked at them over probably at least 2 or 3 years, because as you know, our budget has declined each year for a few years. So we're looking at them, and in each case, we're trying to take the best, and recognizing that all these places are not the same. No one has exactly what we have here, but we are absolutely looking at any and all opportunities to provide Alaskans better education.
Thank you for that answer. I'm also interested, are you the longest serving regent, Ms. Hughes?
On the board now?
Yes, ma'am.
I am the longest serving regent on the board now.
Great. You have a great depth of knowledge and history, and you serve a very important function in our Board of Regents, and I'm glad you're there. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, if members have no further comments, Representative Parrish.
The Education Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the Governor's appointees and recommends that Mary Hughes should be forwarded to a joint session for consideration to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Okay, thank you, Representative Parrish. We will take a brief at ease to sign paperwork and then move on. Thanks very much, Ms. Hughes, for being with us this morning. We are at ease. Okay, we're back on the record. I'd like to recognize that Representative Ivy Sponholz and Representative Zach Fansler joined us during testimony from Ms. Hughes. And former Representative Reggie Jewell was in the room. He is gone, but he will return, I believe. Next up is House Bill 64. We have already had public testimony on this bill, and we are in the process of moving the bill when we left off. We had some changes made to the bill to address the concerns that were brought up in committee, but before we explain the changes in the bill, I would like Representative Parrish to remove his motion to move House Bill 64.
I withdraw my motion to move House Bill 64 out of committee.
Thank you, Mr. Parrish. And now if we could adopt the CS you have before you as the working document.
I move that we adopt committee substitute 30-LS035/J of House Bill 64 as the working document for the Education Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Parrish. I'd like to invite my aide, Kristen Conendonk, up to the front to replace to explain the bill changes.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kristen Conendonk, and I'm staff to Representative Drummond. Representative Drummond has spent the last few weeks working with committee members and interested individuals and organizations to address the concerns that came up during the last bill hearing, and I will explain the changes in the CS, starting with page 1, lines 11 and 12. The language was changed here to recognize the work that the state is doing for students while still acknowledging that it could be improved. Then continuing on to page 2, line 27, section C was added here to examine what education reforms are already being implemented in the state and to look at why those reforms are working or are not working. Also on page 2, between line 27 and page 3, line 2, language was changed in this section to clear up the scope of the task force. We removed some language that gave them authority to fund recommendations and just clean that whole section up. Moving right along to page 4, line 1, we changed language here to allow one member to represent either the Alaska Association of School Boards or the Alaska Council of School Administrators. That was done. We worked with both organizations there for that change. On page 4, lines 4 and 5, we removed the language having a non-voting judge as a member of the task force and replaced that with a member representing the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals. On page 4, line 13, we also changed the language to recognize all nonprofit organizations focused on reading and education issues, and included language to ensure that at least one of those members is the parent of a child with a reading disability, and our hope would be that it would not be limited to just that one parent. And then the only other change was on line 4, page 31, we added a definition of dyslexia, and we worked with several dyslexia organizations to get that definition to make sure it was the one that we did not include the DSM-5 definition that schools use in IEPs because it frames dyslexia as only occurring with kids that have IEPs and served under IDEA, and we know that not to be true. So this is the definition that seems fairly universally accepted, and that's why that was added. And I can answer any questions the committee might have.
All right, very good. Any questions for Ms. Cranadon? Seeing no questions, we have already had public testimony on this bill. Sorry, Representative Fansler, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, just a question about removing the judicial member. Is there a worry that suddenly, I mean, it was in the original bill, is there a worry that removing a judicial member will hurt this committee in some way? Or
through the chair, Representative Fansler, we did that at the request of the court system because judges are not allowed to be partisan and serve on task force, so that probably shouldn't have been in the bill to begin with, and we should have checked with them first.
Right. Thank you, Representative Fansler. Thank you, Ms. Cranadonk. Any further questions? Seeing none, we've already had public testimony on this bill, and I am ready to move this bill out of our committee.
I move the committee substitute for House Bill 75 from committee. 65. I move committee substitute LS 30-LS0345/J of House Bill 64 from the Education Committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Seeing no objection, the bill passes. I'm going to take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Okay, We are back on the record. Moving right along, next on our agenda is House Bill 135, School Construction Grant Program. I would like to invite the bill sponsor up to the front to present his bill. Good morning, Representative Westlake. Put yourself
Good
on the
morning,
record
everybody.
And go ahead.
I'm Dean Westlake. I'm House District 40, and with me is Elizabeth Rexford. She is a First Alaskan Fellow. So we're very glad to be here this morning, and we want to thank you for hearing this bill. House Bill 135 will allow the Commissioner of the Department of Education to grant time extensions to school districts raising their percentage share of project costs appropriated through the Educational Facilities Maintenance and Construction Fund, and that's outlined in AS14.11.008. School district participation in grant programs for appropriations made under AS37.05.560. Currently, school districts are required to make a percentage rate, are required to share the percentage share of the total project costs within 3 years of appropriation approval. However, since the adoption of the three-year time constraint in 1993, multiple projects have required more time to raise the required percentage share. The more recent examples of projects that have required more time include, but certainly not limited to, the Yukon Flats School District, the Northwest Arctic Borough School District, Yupik School District, the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and the Huna School District. According to the Department of Education and Early Development, the three-year time lapse is appropriate for about 95% of the approved projects. However, the outstanding 5% of the projects would utilize a time extension when faced with extenuating circumstances outside of the school district's control. And we've got, you've got the Tuluksac School Improvement Program, the Huna Major Maintenance. You've got Arctic Village. You have Kivalina, as well as Kachemak Silo, all within that 5% range. So without approved grant agreements, it is difficult to apply for other grant funds that could be used toward the local share. Furthermore, if the borough and school district cannot apply for an extension, there is potential that a critically needed school project might be forced to forfeit the previously appropriated state funds when all that is needed is more time to secure additional funding. In this case, if House Bill 135 is passed, the Northwest Arctic Borough could apply in writing to the commissioner to request an extension. If the commissioner decided that the project demonstrated good cause for the requested extension, then the commissioner could grant it. Thank you again for hearing House Bill 135 today. I'm here to answer questions the best I can, but also online. We have Tim Murray from EED. On the phone lines, Clement Richards Sr., Northwest Arctic Borough, Superintendent Raina Hartz and her Director of Maintenance and Operations from the Yupik School District, and Mayor Mike Navarro out of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. We have Brenda Outberg, the Community and Financial Project Manager for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, as well as the Yupik School District and Huna, excuse me, it's early in the morning.
Okay, thank you, Representative Westlake. Let's see, are there questions for the bill sponsor at this time? Representative Johnston, go ahead.
Do you know what the current balance is for that 5% outstanding balance?
Off the top of my head, I do not. As in 95% of the projects done and the 5%, I do not.
That could be helpful.
Okay.
And then how many of these schools were part of a judicial decision?
The one in my district, and that's Kivalina. That was part of a settlement on a lawsuit.
And one more follow-up.
Go ahead.
And Kivalina, that construction is not only the school but the infrastructure to the school. Is that correct?
Actually, those are two different projects. The road that's going out there now, there had been some issue with the Army Corps. Now the state of Alaska stepped in, and it's become a DOT public facilities project.
Okay, so the school still remains independent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any more questions? Representative Kopp, go ahead.
Yes, Madam Chair, but following up on Representative Johnson's question, I think the fact that both projects are necessary has contributed to the problem of the Kivalina replacement school moving forward on schedule because the access road to the school is needed. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, sir. Representative Kopp, what it is it's outside of the school district's control completely, and now that they're moving forward with it, we can hopefully see a successful completion of the school project.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions? Actually, I have a question. Are the schools, is the construction on the schools able to begin without the local share being in hand, or does the department require that the districts have the local share fully within their control before construction can begin on a school?
Rather than take the spotlight, I think maybe the borough mayor can answer that better if he's online.
All right, he is. He is online. We do have some invited testimony, as Representative Westlake said. I have Superintendent Dr. Anne Marie O'Brien of the Northwest Arctic Borough School District on the phone. Dr. O'Brien, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead, ma'am. Put yourself on the record and proceed.
Okay. Yes, good morning, Madam Chair and members of the House Education Committee, and thank you for this opportunity to bring forth our concerns regarding the massacre at Kivalina School, which is greatly impacted by House Bill 135. So the Northwest Arctic Borough School District wholeheartedly endorses House Bill 135, a bill addressing the participation in the school construction grant program, allowing the Commissioner of Education to grant an extension of the time limitation for the identification of the required local participating share of grant funding. Currently, the statutes require that the local match be identified within 3 years of the approval of the legislative appropriation of grant funding. There is no provision for the consideration of exceptional circumstances that warrant additional time to secure the match. This bill recognizes that such situations may occur from time to time and allows boroughs and districts to justify and petition the commissioner for an extension. Without such an extension, there is a potential that a critically needed school project might be forced to forfeit the state appropriation when all that is needed is more time to secure additional local funding sources. The existing state regulations for administration of the school construction grant program protect the state's interest and assure the local match is provided. The department releases grant funding to recipients only after specific milestone conditions are met. The payments are a percentage of only the state share of the project amount, and in addition, 5% of state share is withheld until the source of the local match is identified. There is not a danger of the state over-reimbursing a project. Not only is the state facing restricted funding, but so are local governments. Incorporating some flexibility into the provision for a local match will allow local governments more time to spend their share at the cost of a greatly needed school facility upgrade. Admittedly, the Northwest Arctic has a project that would benefit from this bill, and the Kivalina Replacement School project is a perfect example of why a provision for exceptions is needed. In April 2005, the legislature appropriated partial grant funding for the Kivalina Replacement School. At that time, the clock started ticking to secure the local share. However, the grant agreement has not yet been executed for several reasons beyond the control of the borough and district. For FY 2016, a moratorium was placed on approval of the grant pending legislative consideration of the balance of funding. Another complication is construction of the project cannot begin until an access road is constructed as a separate project. The road development is proceeding in conjunction with the Department of Transportation, but it is not scheduled to be complete before the three-year deadline for the match expires. Without an approved grant agreement, it is difficult to apply for other grants that could be used as part of the local share. House Bill 135 will delegate to the department discretion in extraordinary circumstances to allow projects such as the Kivalina Replacement School to move forward without the potential of having to forfeit appropriated funding, and continuing managing risk to the state and local entities and support the improvement of educational conditions for the children of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent O'Brien. Any questions for the speaker? Representative Johnson, go ahead.
Yes, you. Thank you for the chair. The school district has had a methodical rebuilding of schools that I think started at the 1990s to 2000. And is this the last of the rebuilds for the school district?
Yes, this is correct. This Kivalina School is the last rebuild.
And do you, and this is maybe a difficult question to answer, do you know what the local participation was for, on the average of the other schools?
The match?
Superintendent O'Brien,
yes.
Please respond through the chair and mention your name once again for the benefit of the recorder. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, this is Dr. Anne-Marie O'Brien, and through the chair. Is the question referring to the match?
Right.
Yes, it is my understanding that it has always been at the borough required percentage match.
And what is that?
20%. Through the chair, 20%.
Thank you very much.
Superintendent O'Brien, this is Representative Drummond. I have a question for you as well. I'm concerned that the construction of the Kivalina School is being delayed for such a long time that it's going to cost significantly more, or the school district will have to build less of a school, and perhaps the programs of the school will suffer. Can you speak to that issue?
Thank you for that question, Madam Chair. I think that is a very difficult question to respond to at this time. Actually, we all understand that inflation kicks in the longer any project is delayed. However, I can only say that the needs of the students in the Kivalina School are paramount to any issues pertaining to funding. This existing school is in very bad condition. However, we do patch it up as best we can, and we'll continue to do so until the new school. But honestly, I could not in any way speak to what the potential increase in cost would be. But I'm sure that adjustments would have to be made. We do know there increasingly, as time goes on, there are energy efficiencies and new construction methods relating to insulation and heating that may come into play by the time the school is constructed, and we are hoping to tap into those. Our construction manager is already looking into that. So I think that is the best I can do to answer that question.
Thank you very much for the responses. I have a question from Representative Johnston from you, for you.
Thank you. Sorry for this follow-up. What's the student population of Kivalina?
160. 160 students now.
8 through 12. And what was this past year's graduation graduating class?
I'm sorry to say I don't have that at my fingertips right now.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, any further questions for the speaker? I do have an additional question. I've been hearing about the Kivalina School my entire time on the legislature. I'm now in my fifth year. What is approximately the schedule? I believe, Superintendent O'Brien, you said that the construction on the road would be beginning, and then the school construction would follow that. What's your approximate schedule at this time?
We believe that we could begin the school as soon as the road is completed. I'm sorry for the protocol. I'm not stepping through the chair.
That's okay.
We believe that the construction of the road, of course, is paramount. However, it is a separate project. But once the road is complete, the school construction can begin, and within 2 years, we would have the school. The school would be completed and ready. So we could start it, and we're anticipating the road to take approximately 3 years. I think there's, and so we're looking at a 5-year time frame in the best of circumstances.
Okay. Well, I hope it can be done as quickly as possible. Superintendent O'Brien, thank you very much for that. Seeing no further questions, let's go on to Mayor Mike Navarre of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Mayor Navarre, you know the drill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Mike Navarre, Mayor of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, 144 North Binkley, Silvatin, Alaska. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on this bill. While it doesn't, as currently drafted, affect the Kenai Peninsula Borough, I definitely support its intent. We were given a grant last year from the legislature, $10 million, to build a school in a small community called Kachemak Salo at the end of East End Road. It has access, but it's not legal access because it's a switchback. It's got a very steep grade. We've explored alternatives like building a road there and then building a school between two villages instead of building one down in Kachemak Salo, and we're still exploring our options on that. This would just allow for good cause, the commissioner to allow some flexibility for things like looking at the trends, school population trends. At Kachemak Salo, 5 years ago, there was about 90 kids. A couple years before that, there were almost 100. Now they're down to about 55. But if you build a new school in the community, you're going to likely increase population. So we're trying to figure it out. So additional flexibility, I think, for good cause makes good sense. Also, with respect to the match, which is 35% for the Kenai Peninsula Borough, as I think all of you recognize, we're looking at a significant economic contraction in Alaska as a result of our fiscal situation. It may not have entirely manifested yet, but it is coming, and so it makes it even more difficult to expend $10 million of state money and another $5 or $6 million of Kenai Peninsula Borough money in order to try to for 55 students in a small village. I'm not sure I can get it past the voters or the assembly in terms of the match, nor do I really think at this time it's the best option. We're still trying to determine whether or not we can achieve that goal. And we've asked the department, by the way, for some flexibility, and if we come up with an option that we think makes sense, what we're trying to do is get to a model that can be applied to other areas, remote areas around Alaska, in order to save the state money. We can't keep stumbling along the way that we have been with remote school construction. I think that we need to go with one model and maybe even modular. Anyway, that's a whole other issue. I did visit Kivalina in 1991 when I was chairman of the Finance Committee, House Finance Committee. The recommendation back then was to relocate that village. It's being eroded from the ocean side and from the riverside. And so I'm glad to see that they're building the road and looking at relocating the village. There is no good alternative out in Kivalina, and I think that that probably is the best demonstrated case of why something like this and the flexibility available might prevent rushing to find the funds so that you can preserve the grant, leading to perhaps not the best and most rational fiscally responsible decisions. That's my testimony, and I'd be happy to answer additional questions.
Thank you, Mayor Navarro. I have a question from Representative Johnston.
Thank you, through the chair. I appreciate your testimony and your in-depth look and sort of searching for some sort of vision. If you had a choice, would you rather have the $10 million designated for the school or for education, or in these times, do you want to see an opportunity to claw it back for other capital projects? I know this is an uncomfortable question. I just thought I should ask it.
It's not at all uncomfortable. It's something that we're, Representative Johnston, through the chair, it's not at all uncomfortable. It's something that we're going to be facing more and more, and it's we've got to grasp it. Obviously, that is, in fact, a dilemma, because the what's housing the students in Ketchumak Sable right now, they're in two separate buildings. One is about maybe 1,100 square feet. It's probably 30 or more years old. It's a converted house. Another one is probably about another maybe 2,500 total square feet. And both of them are deficient. It's not adequate. Something has to be done. And the alternative may be, and as much as I hate to say it, and the folks in Ketchumak Sable won't want to hear this, it may be that we need to opt for an alternative of correspondence in that community. And Or maybe, you know, one of the things that we're contemplating is whether or not it makes better sense to give a grant to the community, build a facility that can be used for education but isn't a school. And I don't know, I'll explain that further if we get down the road on that option, because it would require the legislature to change the grants. But finding, you know, it's a tough question. We're facing that right now with my focus on what I see coming, how it's going to affect the borough and the state, obviously, and whether or not and just how much we can put into education. It is, it's a dilemma. So I'm a strong supporter of education, but it's a challenge, as all of you know.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Yes, I just want to thank you, and I want to also thank you for, as I say, thinking beyond present day and trying to incorporate some sort of vision. Thank you.
Any further questions? Mayor Navarro, I do have a question myself, Representative Drummond. Is Ketchumak Salo at the head of Ketchumak Bay?
Madam Chair, yes, it is. It's at the very end of East End Road. There's a kind of a switchback that then you drive across a tidal flat area and you're into the village. And the reality is the village should have never been built down there. We explored trying to get access. There's another village that's about maybe a mile and a half as the crow flies, but we looked at trying to build a road to it and then build one school for the two communities, because we know once we build in this community, we're going to get a demand for a school in the next community. And the topography and soil conditions and engineering report, it's just not feasible. It's about $15 million to build the road.
Wow. Thanks for your practical perspective on that. I believe I got almost all the way there several years ago on a visit to the Homer area, and I think I was put off by the switchback. That tells me that it would also be very difficult to bus students out of there to another location. Would that be correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair. It's not a legal road because of grade, et cetera, so we cannot bus kids out of there. We looked at building a gondola also, we've explored options to try to to try to address it, and there are no easy options.
Wow, that's impressive. All right, thank you very much, Mayor Navarre. Appreciate your participation this morning. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing no one, I have no further testifiers online with us. I'd like to open it. Well, let's see. There's no public testimony. Anyone else? Any further discussions? I'll close public testimony on this bill now. Is there any further discussion on the bill from committee members? Representative Tallarico.
Madam Chair, I just wondered, was it your intention to attempt to move the bill today, or would we hold it? I had a potential amendment I would offer.
I would. I really appreciate the amendment, and I would like to give committee members an opportunity to work on any additional amendments they might want and hear it again on the 15th. So we will accept your amendment at that time and move forward at that point.
Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion? I think this is important legislation. We've heard from a number of districts, and I believe we need to pass this bill out on the 14th. All right. And I'd also like to recognize that former Representative Reggie Jewell has rejoined us in the back of the room from the Kotzebue area. Welcome. All right. Finally today, we have House Bill 137, State Council on the Arts. This is a committee bill, so I will have my aide come up and present the bill, and then have the State Council on the Arts to answer questions about the bill.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kristen Kremnick, and I'm staff to Representative Drummond. Before you have House Bill 137, this bill will semi-privatize the Alaska State Council on the Arts by restructuring it as a public corporation in order to help the council continue its work with Alaskan artists and art businesses around the state. HB 137 will improve the ability of the council to leverage non-state funding. Under HB 137, the council will remain within the Department of Education and Early Development. The bill will exempt the council from state procurement code, but will still provide formal and appropriate procurement proposals, or protocols, excuse me. Restructuring will keep the Alaska State Council on the Arts operating budget under the Executive Budget Act for Openness and Transparency. Transition language will allow the council advisory committees, public processes, and public participation to remain in place as the council administers grants, programs, and services. Private funders from across the nation are increasingly approaching the council to offer support, and this legislation has the potential to allow the council to advance the opportunity to grow and develop the base, as well as reduce its reliance on state funds. I would like to go over the sections of the bill for you, starting with Section 1, which goes from page 1 through page 4. Section 1 amends Statute 39.25.110 concerning exempt state employees and adds all council employees council employees to the exempt status. Our office did contact several of them, and they were supportive of this legislation. The council currently has 4 full-time employees. Section 2 starts on page 5 and goes through page 7, and it adds artist submissions made in response to an inquiry or solicitation initiated by the council to the list of records that are exempt from public inspection. Section 3 starts on page 7 and repeals and reenacts Statute 44.27.040 regarding the creation of the council, and it establishes the council as a separate and independent public corporation of the state of Alaska within the Department of Deed. Section 4 amends Statute 44.27.041 to change the State Council of the Arts to be governed by an 11-member Board of Trustees
It adds literary arts as a field represented within the board, and it adds a member's expertise rather than interest as a factor in considering them for board membership. Section 5, also on page 7, amends language to repeal the term members and turn that into trustees, and it replaces council with board of trustees. Section 6 on page 8 replaces the term member with trustee. Section 7, also on page 8, replaces the term members with the term trustees and replaces language that entitles trustees to be reimbursed for state travel at the same rate as members of other state boards. Section 8, that section just changes, it uses gender-neutral terms for board members. Section 9 is on pages 8 and 9, and it amends statute to require the council to encourage literary arts as well as other disciplines. It invests in arts throughout the state and conducts research into artistic and cultural activities throughout the state. In Section 10, on page 9 of the bill, we've amended language and we've replaced educational objectives with strategic objectives, and as it relates to the council's ability to enter into contracts and accept gifts, contributions, and bequests. Section 11 on page 9 amends statute 44.27.054 to replace language with the proper terms chair and trustees, which just allows the bill to conform to Section 1. Section 12 on page 10 adds a new section detailing the administration of affairs of the Board of Trustees. The board maintains assets of the council. It amends bylaws governing the business of the corporation, and the executive director to supervise administration of the council. This section also exempts the council from the state procurement code, which I went over a little bit. Section 13 of the bill on page 10, this will require the state council and the arts to comply with the National Foundation of the Arts Act of 1965 as it relates to the receipt and distribution of funds from the National Endowments of the Arts. Section 14 adds the new subsections E and F regarding confidentiality of artist submissions and adds a provision for public disclosure to submissions only when the artist is actually awarded the said submission. It does not apply to submissions that were created as a work for hire under 17 U.S.C. 101, or if the artist's copyright has been transferred under the same. Section 15 on page 11 adds definitions for boards of trustees and council. Section 16 on page 11 and 12 creates transition language to allow council and members to remain on as board of trustees until their term is over, and allows current employees to remain with the council. It also allows regulations, contracts, rights, liabilities, and obligations created under law to remain in effect, and allows the council to retain all records, equipment, appropriations, and other property. And the last section, section 17 on 12, creates an effective date for this legislation as July 1, 2017.
Okay, any questions from the committee for Ms. Cranadonk? Okay, seeing none. I have Benjamin Brown in the room to come up. Ben, would you please come up, place yourself on the record, and answer any questions the committee members might have?
Yes.
Assuming you have testimony as well.
Madam Chairman, always a wise assumption. Thank you. Good morning. Benjamin Brown. I'm the chairman of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, and it's a position I've had the pleasure of holding for a decade now. I was first appointed by Governor Murkowski and was reappointed by Governor Palin, Governor Parnell, and most recently by Governor Walker. The last year, the council, my colleagues and I, have been working on ways to address challenges that are facing us uniquely as a state arts agency, but that are also not dissimilar to challenges being faced by all parts of state government. And the two really found a nexus, I think, as we looked at ways to craft a bill that would put us in a new strategic position to enable us to perform really well for the next 50 years like we have for the last 50 years. Your aide, Madam Chairman, did a fine job going through the sectional analysis on the bill. As you know, when we came to meet with you to request if you would consider sponsoring it as a committee bill, we kind of laid out for you that this is not something that we've moved to do hastily, and it's been the process. It's the result of a very lengthy and considered process involving all 11 volunteer council members and all of our staff, and also stakeholders, our friends at the Rasmussen Foundation and other foundation partners of the State Council on the Arts. I know that our executive director, Andrea Noble-Pallant, and one of our council members have some testimony they want to offer as well. I'm very passionate about the arts generally and about this agency specifically, so I could really go on at great length, but that's not appropriate in a 90-day session on a Friday morning when you have other business to attend to. So I would probably be best served just to see if there are questions the committee members have, Madam Chairman, about the council generally, about this bill, and I'll do my very best to answer them.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brown. Questions for Mr. Brown? Representative Kopp, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Brown, for being here and for the ongoing work, it sounds like, over the past few years to bring forward this recommendation. Can you give us an example of how this bill will enable the Arts Council to more effectively partner with nonprofits who wish to make donations to the Alaska State Council on the Arts?
Yes, Madam Chairman, Representative Kopp. We currently, and for many years, have enjoyed a very good working relationship with the Rasmussen Foundation. And actually, the majority of the funds that we expend in arts education programs come from the Rasmussen Foundation now. More recently, we've embarked on a multi-year partnership with the Margaret A. Cargill Foundation. And those funds are now enabling us to pursue some really meaningful, long-term, transformative work with school districts, including Copper River and Kodiak, are two of the school districts in our New Visions program. As we've been receiving those funds, and the bill provides that ASCA will remain under the Executive Branch Budget Act, so we're not trying to exempt ourselves from the governor or the legislature's oversight in the receipt and expenditure of private foundation funds. The procurement code is really one of the things that triggered the need for this legislation, because it has become apparent that when we receive funds with legislative approval from a private foundation, turning around and having to expend those as if they were just undesignated general fund dollars by a mainline state agency has been unnecessarily cumbersome. So we attempt to sponsor a biennial arts conference to bring artists and arts advocates from across the state together. We have to do it in Anchorage now because it's just cost prohibitive to try to bring everyone together anywhere else. And the most recent of those conferences, we found there were some hoops that we were having to jump through that just were providing no real benefit and were just creating a lot of unnecessary time for the staff. So going forward, we realized that that wasn't the only thing that was an attribute of a regular state agency that didn't necessarily fit our desire to be nimble, seek out private foundation funding, partner funding, and to turn around and expend it in a manner that benefits the constituency, which is either arts educators or individual artists or arts organizations. So by exempting us from the procurement code, and actually staff can speak to this more eloquently than I can, you know, as the council chairman, I received the phone call, you know, on the eve of the conference saying, you won't believe what we've just been told about this contract. Or there was another arts education convening that we had done previously, and the hotel in Anchorage didn't get paid for 3 months. You know, I was afraid they were going to send, what was it Roddy Dangerfield said, Rocco and Moose to, you know, help her find her checkbook, our executive director at the time. I'm sorry, that's a reference to Caddyshack. But at any rate, it was, you know, the hotel was not getting paid because of a purely bureaucratic red tape impediment. We certainly will make sure that everything we do is open and transparent. We just don't need to operate as if we were housed down at Gold Belt Plaza, the Michael Burns building, as a regular part of the Department of Education. We like being housed there administratively. They've been incredibly supportive. The current commissioner and deputy commissioner are wonderful. The staff there are wonderful. But we operate out of an office in Anchorage, and I think a little bit more independence and autonomy are just going to make us more responsive to our funding environment and the programs that we're providing. But that's a specific example, was the procurement code and an arts conference, and it threw a wrench into things at the last minute that didn't really serve any good purpose.
Thank you.
No follow-up, Mr. Kopp. Thank
you. No, we don't have time for follow-up.
All right. Well, actually, we're doing okay. Remember, it's Education that stops at 9:30. We go till 10. I have a question from Representative Sponholz and then Representative Johnston.
Thank you, Chair. One of the questions that I have, Mr. Brown, is that, there have been other former, state programs which have gone private in the past in order to get additional flexibility. And I'm wondering how it is that this the Alaska Children's Trust comes to mind. And so I'm wondering how it is that the State Arts Council landed in this sort of hybrid model as the ideal spot, and whether or not you considered sort of all the options.
Madam Chairman, Representative Sponholz, and of course you're very conversant as the chair of the board of the Alaska Children's Trust. I'm fairly conversant. My father was instrumental in its being founded back in the day, and I've monitored its progress over the years. And Diane Kaplan, the president of the Rasmussen Foundation, also has been a big supporter of the Children's Trust and was instrumental in helping it get out from the shackles of being a mainline state agency, at least in its operational rules and strictures that it had to abide by. One thing I need to tell the committee, Madam Chairman, is we could not become fully private without losing all of our matching funds from the National Endowment for the Arts. The National Foundation on the Arts and Humanities Act provides very clearly that state arts agencies must be parts of state government, and the only exception is the Vermont Arts Council, which is a statutorily designated private nonprofit, and that the money that goes to match the NEA money has to be a state appropriation. It can't come from a private foundation. So the Rasmussen money or the Cargill money could never supplant the modest yet essential appropriation we receive from the state legislature to trigger those federal matching funds. So what we've kind of done is try to take it as far along the spectrum towards privatization as possible. And Ms. Cranadoc was correct in describing it as quasi-privatization. We couldn't become entirely private. That was tried, unfortunately, in Kansas, and it was a disaster. And Kansas lost all of its federal money, which, interestingly enough, because of a 40% rule in Congress that's that amount, 40% of the NEA's appropriation, has to go to state arts agencies. Kansas's money got divvied up. We got a share of it. All the other jurisdictions ended up getting a share of that, and we would hate to see that happen with Alaska's money. So what we've done is tried to find a way that is a compromise, and we will remain administratively housed in the Department of Education and Early Development. We'll still have an enabling statute. The legislature could go in future years and change things in the enabling statute in the manner we're proposing it be changed right now if there are things that the future legislature doesn't like. But given that, the current council will start to operate. And the council is a very hands-on working board. All 11 members perform duties above and beyond just coming to the one annual meeting that the travel restrictions allow us to have in person. So what it will do is, I think, just kind of free us to be more nimble but still accountable to the public. Much as the Children's Trust found it very difficult to grant money out in a manner that was really the best and highest use, we found that, again, with some certain specific activities such as sponsoring certain sorts of convenings and conferences, the procurement code has really been an obstacle. And in terms of being nimble and responsive to staffing fluctuations, we had 6 full-time and a half part-time, one part-time half position as recently as a year ago. We're now down to 4 full-time positions. And if we're going to continue to be flexible in that way, not having employees in the classified service, having them in the exempt service, using contractors where necessary, those are the sorts of things that I think are going to be necessary for us to meet the realities of the new budget environment. But we don't want to go anywhere. We have no plans to go anywhere. We want to continue to meet our mission to encourage all Alaskans to create art and enjoy art every day in their lives for all the benefits, economic, emotional, intellectual. But at the same time, we don't see the wisdom in just saying, well, let's keep trying to do it the old way and hoping that it's not going to continue to be frustrating. Our experience in the past few years is that's not a winning strategy. It was a long-winded answer, Representative Sponholz, Madam Chair.
No, but it was very efficient. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Any further questions for Mr. Brown? Representative Johnston, go ahead.
Yes, I'm just curious, in this quasi-state, are you still under the personnel rules of the state?
Madam Chairman, Representative Johnston, the first section of the bill takes our staff and places them in the exempt service. So not the Personnel Act, but there are certainly still rules that apply to employees in the exempt service. But they're not as constraining, those rules. And I'm pleased to mention that I was pleased that the chairman's staff mentioned having consulted with our staff. This is not something we're attempting to do without their awareness or consent. They're aware that there are certain benefits that come from being in the classified service, but they're also aware that those benefits necessarily don't necessarily provide a whole lot of benefit to them in their daily working life when the agency is in flux and there are budgetary pressures. So there will be the rules that apply to employees in the exempt service will still be there, but not that would apply to employees in the classified service.
And this might seem like an awkward question, but are you assigned a vacancy factor from the Department of Administration?
We currently have six employees on the books, if you will, and then this part-time person who runs the Contemporary Art Bank. Only four of those positions are filled right now. One of those positions is the Visual and Literary Arts Director, and that position was occupied by Andrea Noble-Palant, who's currently our Executive Director. That's a maintained vacancy by the Department of Education. The other position was an accounting technician, and it was moved to shared services, but it's vacant. So I don't really know what that means right now, because since it was moved vacant, I don't know if there's a vacancy over at shared services. What I can tell you is the existing staff have basically just picked up that work and run with it. And that's not something that really technically would be permissible in the classified service, reassigning duties like that. But I can tell you in my experience with the council of over a decade, our staff have been doing that all along. They've been picking up and doing duties outside what's on their job description, just making sure that things get done. It's a very collaborative environment. There's well over a century of cumulative experience in the arts and all the people currently working there. And so I'm not sure if we actually have an assigned vacancy factor, but I know what our vacancy numbers are right now, and I would be very concerned if we got any smaller at the current rate. And the idea of enacting this legislation is to enable us to go out and get more money so that we have the funds to pay for the staff that we need without asking the legislature for a penny more than we have to get to meet our federal match.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Any further questions? I have one. What you just said about transferring the vacant, was that an accounting position,
mm-hmm.
over to shared services, vacant, was moved over there. Are you getting services from shared services?
You know, I would probably defer to Andrea, our executive director, and ask to what extent that's happening. The person who moved into our office manager position was the person in the accounting technician position, so she was uniquely qualified to kind of juggle both those things and do that work. But when certain things come up, like our 3-year partnership agreement with the NEA, we may well need to take advantage of that vacant position over at Shared Services, so we will be finding out whether there's a person occupying it or not. Because it'll be hard for a vacant position at Shared Services to do much to help us, I imagine. But
exactly. All right. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Please stay in the room in case there are any more questions. I am going to open public testimony and invite Andrea Noble-Palant, who has been on the phone with us since 8 a.m. Ms. Palant, put yourself on the record, please, and proceed. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Andrea Noble-Palant. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. Thank you all for the opportunity to testify in support of HB 137. As Benjamin mentioned, I have 30 years of experience in arts-related positions, including 11 years at the Alaska State Council on the Arts. And if I may bring up an example, Madam Chair, through the Chair for Representative Kopp.
Go ahead.
Currently, we are planning an upcoming summit in partnership with the National Endowment for the Arts around military and healing in the arts. And we've been selected as one of 12 national sites. This is a huge honor for us to be participating in this program called Creative Forces. We are currently planning a summit coordinating with our military partners for July. So the time that we have to plan the logistics for this and include key stakeholders from around the state is approximately 3 months. We've partnered with Americans for the Arts to administer their logistics because we simply, as an agency, and currently how we're structured, could not move that quickly. That's my response to an example.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have further testimony?
Yes, Madam Chair, I do.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. The Alaska State Council on the Arts is now in its 51st year. We are ready for organizational change. the timing of HB 137 is opportune, as Alaska's creative industry is currently growing and expanding due to a decade of targeted public and private investment in our state and focus on the arts as a culture sector and an economic player. As a result, the Alaska State Council on the Arts has experienced rapid growth in grants, programs, and public-private partnerships. We wish to continue this effort, and with the provisions in HB 137, the Alaska State Council on the Arts is poised to continue grant making as a public corporation that will also allow new and existing programs to reach more Alaskans with increased impact and efficiency. We work on local, national, and international levels to oversee projects and initiatives that build capacity for arts organizations, provide practical professional development for individual artists, and boost students' chances for success through arts in education. Through mutually beneficial alliances with public-private sector partners, our reach extends to military service members and their families who experience PTSD, incarcerated individuals who want to be productive when they leave prison, pre-service teachers from rural communities, Alaskan children and youth who want opportunities to learn through arts and culture, and parents who want to raise their families in safe, sustainable communities. These are the impacts that our work has. Keeping with our mission, revenue from funders and agency services goes back to Alaska residents and communities as grants, programs, and resources. Long-standing partnerships are in place, and we work collaboratively with these partners, even to the point of evaluations, to ensure that we're all taking steps in the same direction. Our partners include the Rasmussen Foundation, the Alaska Arts and Culture Foundation, the Atwood Foundation. New partners include Margaret A. Cargill Philanthropies, the Siri Foundation, and Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Other partners include the Alaska Humanities Forum, the Western State Arts Federation, who contribute in-kind support, resources, and funding. HB 137 provides flexibility for staff to manage these fast-flow projects in a timely manner and to work statewide across other sectors where we can create further impact in areas such as health, economic development, tourism, and transportation. HB 137 allows for responsive project execution that is necessary for our desired collaborative outcomes, which affects our performance evaluations and our ability to secure future funding. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Pallant. Anyone else for questions for the speaker? Seeing none, thank you so much for your testimony. I'd like to now call on Alice Bioff from Kowarik in Nome. Ms. Bioff, are you on the line with us? And excuse me if I mispronounced your name.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Yes, you did pronounce it correctly. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of HB 137. Honorable Committee Chair and committee members, my name is Alice Bioff, resident of Nome, Alaska. Currently employed at Kowarik and an Alaska State Council on the Arts Council member. Thank you all for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 137. I am testifying today in my capacity as an ASCA Council member. I am a tribal member of the Native Village of Koyuk and grew up there and here in Nome. My family and I have lived in Nome for the last 17 years. For much of that time, I have been employed by Kowarik, the regional nonprofit consortium of tribes for the Bering Strait region, as a business planning specialist. Through our work here at Kowarik, I am honored and privileged to work with artists entrepreneurs within our communities. We provide direct technical assistance, offering tools and resources to assist artists continue their work so that they can sustain themselves, their families, and their communities. It is through this work that I have seen firsthand how important it is for these artists who live in communities with very few resources and infrastructure to grow their businesses through opportunities such as those that become available through ASCA and other organizations. Artist entrepreneurs are economic development drivers in their communities, and the Alaska State Council on the Arts support these communities through their work and advocacy. With their partnerships, resources, and programs, we see a bright future and growth opportunity to support all artists across the state. Through the restructuring initiative, we see ASCA services continued and strengthened to support the artists through improved ability to react to funding opportunities, better represent, support, and advance the artists by offering the tools and services needed to strengthen an already existing and important economy. This is critical to strengthening and sustaining our rural communities in this fiscally challenging time. House Bill 137 streamlines the process ASCA will use to present opportunities to artists all over Alaska, including those artists we have worked with for years here in the Bering Straits region. From my perspective, this will be a great benefit for all artists, including those in rural Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Bioff. Any questions for the speaker? All right, seeing none, thank you very much. Anyone in the room interested in testifying in this bill? Seeing no one, I'm going to close public testimony. This bill was brought to us by the council, and I know each office had an opportunity to weigh in before we even introduced it as a committee bill. I'm ready to move this bill out of our committee. May I get a motion?
I move House Bill 137, version 30-LS0556/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached indeterminate fiscal note.
All right, thank you, Representative Parrish. Any further discussion or comments on the bill? All right, seeing no objection, the bill passes. We will sign the paperwork immediately after we adjourn today. And we do not have a meeting on Monday, so the next House Education meeting will be next Wednesday, March 15th. We will finish our confirmation hearings and take up House Bill 102, Limited Teacher Certificates, again. And with that, we are adjourned at 9:33 a.m.